The feels of love. A senior thinks you're cute, Beth Diaz whispers in your ear. These are the most amazing words you've ever heard come out of her mouth. There is you, and then there are high school seniors, 17, 18-year-olds, with cars and sound systems, no uniforms on Fridays because they are now exempt. You ask, who, your abdomen burning up with this news, and she whispers again, shh, it's Chad, that's who, because her friend's brother's cousin's babysitter said so. Something like that, but it doesn't matter to you. A senior thinks you're cute. And who are you? You are still a middle schooler, 12 years old, almost 13. You have two friends, four horses, a new splatter of acne across your forehead. You don't even wear a bra yet. Lately, you are known as Queera or Twinky Chinky. But now, everything is different. Everything will change, you're sure. A senior thinks you're cute. Here's what you do when you come home from school. Find Chad in last year's yearbook. Call Clarissa and Beth on three-way to tell them you found him. Look, page 49. Those lips, they both say. And you agree. You have never seen anyone more beautiful than Chad. His eyes are squinty and green, like the deep end of a lake, his black hair spiked. The yearbook shows him laughing with a group of friends, sprawled out on a school picnic table in the sun. They look so much like adults, you can't even believe it. He's going to instant message you tonight, says Beth. I gave my friend's brother's cousin's babysitter your screen name to give to him. You all scream into the phone. You scream a scream that brings your father into the room, soggy from a nap, yelling, "The fuck is happening? You jacking up my phone bill?" He closes the door before you can answer. Here's the thing about America Online, about the instant messaging. You can be anyone. Dominique Mocianu, Britney Spears' cousin, a milkmaid from Mississippi, a criminal. Anyone but yourself. Recently, the jealous ex-boyfriend of a popular girl from school, such a creeper, uploaded some photos of her onto an AOL homepage. They show the girl lying on her stomach, on a bed, her pink thong blooming. Slats of light curve over her body from the bent window blinds. She wears dark blue eyeshadow, her hair is in a white blonde ponytail, her pointer finger is in her mouth. You and Clarissa have been sending these photos to the anonymous men you meet online, in chat rooms, and they're all crazy about this so-called Ashley Flowers, a 10th grader in downtown Miami. They send erotic poems, photos of the stirring bulges in their pants, hyphen roses that blossom into at symbols. One man named Richard sends a blurry photo of his cock next to a Coke can for scale. In the dark, with your face inches from the screen, you feel like each one of these men might love you. On the news, JonBenet Ramsey does a dance. Her case is still open years later, and everyone still cares. You watch her stamped-on face, clickety-clack cowboy boots, the tulle, her curls of shredded heaven. You strap on your headgear, hook the elastic behind your big ears. One has to be so beautiful to be chosen like that, you think. Only beautiful girls are taken. Angelic white girls, adored and obsessed over, too good for this earth. Your parents sip their seltzers, hold hands, and say, "Such a damn shame. So cute she was." It is important to the story to know that Beth is beautiful. Beth is Latina, whip smart, a salsa dancer, the first poet you've ever met. But most important, she is beautiful. She is almost one full year older, the oldest of the seventh graders, while you are the youngest. She has always been kind to you and Clarissa, and you're both as jealous as you are grateful. Beth has friends, admiring teachers, and parents. Most of all, she has boys. You and Clarissa watch it happen in the hallways at school, a boy's arms wrapped around her, his little metal mouth going in for a kiss. "I put lotion on as soon as I get out of the shower," Beth says, "in every place. The best way in is smelling good." The next day, you and Clarissa go to the mall and buy the same Juniper Breeze lotion as Beth. You smudge it on your wrists, rub it through your hair to grease down the flyaways. You slick it between your legs, even though it stings there. One weekend, Beth offers to do your makeup like her own. You and Clarissa sit still as figurines while Beth paints on the glitter powders, the goopy gloss. She traces black lines around your eyes and inside the rims of your eyelids. You can tell she cares, that she wants you to feel more sophisticated, older. When she's this close to your face, you almost kiss her. Chad does instant message you, every night, in fact, like clockwork. "Hey, Cherry Top," he says, because seventh grade is the grade you dyed your hair Mars red to offset the braces. "Hey, you," is what you always say. "You" sounds adult, closer than friends. "I think you're so cute," he says. "The first thing I noticed about you was your red hair. Very punk. I love it." "Cute," rolling on the floor laughing my ass off. "Look who's talking, LOL," you say. You gnaw at your cuticles and wait for him to respond, for the bloop sounds of his messages. You have abandoned all your other chat room boyfriends. "Ashley Flowers is dead," you tell the men. "This is her mother speaking and she's gone. My sadness is uncontrollable. I can't bear it. She was murdered. She had leukemia but didn't want to tell you. She slipped on a ski slope in Lake Tahoe. Such a tragic vacation. It changes every day." You and Clarissa receive wonderful emails from Ashley's suitors, how much she meant to them, how she was the bright light of their days, how they've written ballads in her honor, how they would each marry her. They would. Clarissa takes on the role of Ashley's grieving best friend so she can continue chatting with those who show the most sensitivity. But you don't need any of them anymore. All you need is Chad, a person in the real world, a real man who drives a real car. Chad, who knows what you look like, who noticed you, who even knows your school schedule and where you take your study hall. You and Chad chat all night about your favorite movies and Bill Clinton and the science teacher you've both had. "I think she might be an actual lesbo," you say, and he agrees, "Such a dyke, LOL." "I think you might be the only person to understand me," you say. "Same here," says Chad. "Why aren't we real friends at school then? You don't even say hi." "People would judge, LOL. They wouldn't understand us." "I guess." "Baby, just consider us special friends," he says. "Our own little secret." "Baby." You repeat the word aloud to yourself, read and reread it on your screen to be sure. Your heart thumps between your legs. "Baby." "Secrets can be the most fun," he says. 15 years later, you are 27 years old, and your father has just died. You're in an isolated artist colony in New Hampshire in the frozen snap of winter, here to finish another project you have failed to finish, and you sob yourself to sleep every night thinking about how much you miss your father, his big sweeping arms, your smallness. You go so long without talking to other people that you begin having conversations with a rocking chair, convinced the chair is haunted by your father. He rocks it sometimes on his own, and you try to decipher the code. While browsing through old emails one night, you find a message in your spam box. It's Chad. It's dated 1 year ago, almost to the day. It says, "I need you to forgive me for the things that have happened. It is my one wish." You recognize this message. You have received similar messages from him over the years. Delete, block, vomit, repeat. Each time you block one, Chad creates a new account and name, sends another. You have never once considered responding to his pleas. The few people you have ever told have said, don't you dare, forget you ever saw that. It is satisfying to delete his words, to watch them disappear, but here's the thing, you can't forget you ever saw that. Now, though, you are the saddest you've ever been in your life. Your father is dead. Your mother is off the wagon again. You can't finish anything. Just last week, your childhood house burned down with everything in it. You wonder when the world will stop hurting you. You respond. Chad is my boyfriend, Beth tells you on the phone. I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want your hopes and dreams to be, like, totally crushed. I like that you liked that he liked you, she said. It was cute. But Chad is my secret boyfriend, and it's serious, she says. Maybe even love, she says. She says, you need to move on. Clarissa can't believe it. You're sitting in the school locker room straddling a bench, snapping bubblicious gum. Yesterday, you decided to dye your hair back to black, your natural color. You want to look sad all the time, and you think this will help. Your ears are stained gray from the dripping chemicals. That bitch, says Clarissa. Who does she think she is? She's probably making it up because she's crazy jealous of you. You both allow the lie to sit between you, to swell there. But Chad doesn't stop messaging. In fact, he messages you more. He's sorry, just so sorry, that he never told you about Beth. He didn't want to break up your best friendship. Do you have a private line, he asks you, to talk like adults? If I get off AOL, I can free up the line, yeah, you say. It's the first time you've ever heard his voice. At school, he's only ever looked at you, through the classroom windows, from inside his car, across a swarm of students moving through the bells. He has never once even waved. His voice on the phone does not match what you'd imagined. It's high-pitched, ragged as puberty. His laugh sounds like Pee Wee Herman crying, you later tell Clarissa. Are you in bed? Asks Chad. I want to talk you to sleep like I'm tucking you in. Chad wants to know what you're wearing under the covers, if you know what sex is, if you've ever given a blowjob, and if so, to whom. Aren't these questions you should be asking your girlfriend, you say? What I have with Beth doesn't change the way I feel about you, says Chad. I can't even talk to her anymore, you say. It's too painful for me. I have another friend who thinks you're cute. We both beat off to you, he says. Maybe if you like him, we could go on double dates. The four of us could always be together, in secret. That way I can still be close to you, because I think I might love you, he says. I love you too, you say. You like the gravity of that word. You feel sure inside of it. Instead of calling Beth every night, you start calling Chad. Beth thinks she's too good for you and Clarissa. She's become a real snob, a bitch, you tell yourself. That friend I told you about, says Chad. I really think you would like him. I'll be so jealous, but I really hope you can go out, so I can be around you in real life without getting into trouble. I don't even know who he is, you say. He could be a creep. He's my best friend, Cherry Top. I'm not even a cherry top anymore, thanks for noticing. Talk to him for me. It doesn't take long for Gil to message you. Gil is another senior, and he seems nice enough, but maybe a little boring. You have similar interests. He sends you song lyrics from emo bands. Your taste still lingers on my lips like I just placed them upon yours, and I starve for you. And you tell him about your obsession with Chris Caraba of Dashboard Confessional. He just gets me. How you recently had him autograph your Charlie Brown t-shirt at a concert while your mother waited in the car. Do you ever feel so alone? Asks Gil. All the time, you say. I want to kill myself almost every day. My mom is so embarrassing. My dad's been drunk my whole life, and I have nobody who gets what it's like. That was before me. LOL. Gil is a good listener. Sensitive. Sweet. You think he might be a good long-term friend or maybe husband material one day. You plan to meet him the next day between C and D periods, just a wave in the hall so you can find out who he is. You don't look him up in the yearbook because the suspense gets your blood pumping. The next day, you wear your mom's bra under your school uniform. You stuff it with cloudy silicone pads shaped like chicken cutlets. You and Clarissa bought a whole pack at the mall last month, felt each other's double push-up bra padding as if you were lovers. Oh yeah, baby, that feels so good. The cutlets feel most like the real thing. After C period, you stand by the door of your history class. Middle and high schoolers rush by. Eat shit, Queera. Kill yourself already. You respond by holding up your pentacle necklace. You've recently promised you are casting hair loss spells. You look for somebody cute, somebody you must have missed all this time. And then somebody approaches you and says, "Hey, I'm Gil," and everything inside your body crumples. This man looks old, old, like 30. He's over 6 feet tall and wears a ponytail, tinted square transition glasses purpled by the sun. He breathes through his mouth and it hangs open, underbitten, the smell of clogged dishwater. Most striking are his teeth, narrow and long as piano keys, the gum line black. He leans in to hug you and you scrunch your face into a walnut. Disgusting. You ignore all messages from Gil after that. Chad looks older now in his online picture. His face is bloated, hairy. The whites of his eyes have gone red. The picture is one he took of himself on a phone in a splattered bathroom mirror. You respond to his message. You say, "Why do you want my forgiveness?" "I don't know. I guess I just feel bad," he says, "about the way things happened." "Why?" you say again. "I didn't know if I should act on the feels of love for you," he says, "and I chose wrong. Anyway, I can't believe you'd still be that mad about it now, after all this time. Beth didn't care." He's lonely, you think, or maybe desperate. He only wants a way back in. You've heard rumors about his life after high school. Everyone has. "I was 12," you say. "Those things don't go away." "In my defense," he says, "I thought you were 13. "Let's put all this bullshit behind us," Chad says in an instant message. It's a Friday night, and you're alone as usual. Clarissa is always babysitting. You refuse to speak to Beth, even though she tries. "I feel bad we've never actually hung out." "Not very nice of me," says Chad. "Why don't we go to the mall this weekend? Buy some presents?" "Just us?" you ask. "Really, for real?" "Just us," he says. "Why don't you pick me up tomorrow morning around 10? "You shitting me?" he says. "Not looking to get arrested. Get dropped off at the mall, noon." You call Clarissa. "You will never guess what I'm doing tomorrow." Clarissa screams. You both scream. Your father opens your door again. "When did it become always scream, scream, scream?" he says. You shuffle through your drawers, try to find the perfect outfit. Your school uniform consists of sweater vests, long khaki skirts, starched collars that cut. This is your chance, you think, to look like a sultry island princess, to embrace where you came from, to show off the exotic woman you could one day be. You go through every outfit with Clarissa on the phone and decide on the perfect one. Shredded bell bottoms, purple satin flip-flops with beaded flowers, a matching purple t-shirt that says "Hawaiian Girl" in silver glitter across the chest. You use your new sapphire flat iron to press your hair straight. You light incense under your vanity mirror and practice applying your makeup through the snaking smoke. You blast Boys to Men and sway your hips in the mirror like a woman. You decide to wear a bra, one that fits. Your mother bought it for you recently, a training piece. It's pink with red flowers, a little embarrassing, too cute, but the t-shirt covers the straps. You like the way it feels, tight across your chest. You don't sleep that night. In bed, you read Little Girl Lost for the 100th time, trying to distract yourself. On the cover, Drew's hair is frizzed and lit from behind. Her lipstick is dark. Drew's life was so hard, you think. You used to relate to this book. Fucked up parents, a choking loneliness. Her only friend was the robot of E.T., and your only friend was this book version of Drew. But that was the old you. That was before men. Look at you now. It is difficult to find the 28-year-old Beth. Years ago, you looked her up online. You had exchanged a few words, casual niceties, but now that account and address are gone. Vanished. Her old number is disconnected, as if she doesn't exist. Your remaining high school friends haven't thought of her in years. There's one person who knows where she is. The friend whose friend's brother's cousin's babysitter helped make it all happen. You still don't know the story. She hands over Beth's email address and wishes you well. You write an email with the subject line, "Difficult." You divide this email into two parts. Part one explains that you miss her. Part two explains that you're sorry. "You were such a huge part of my life," you write, "through those achy formative years, but we're also connected in a way we never fully addressed." Your mother drives you to the mall before a hair appointment. When she asks who you are meeting, you tell her it's Beth. She's too close with Clarissa's mom for the lie. "That's good, sweetie. I thought you had a falling out or something. I haven't seen her around lately. I've always liked Beth. A good best friend to have." "I'm sure you did," you say, rolling your eyes. "Daddy and I will pick you up at 4. We'll go to Sushi Ray." "Whatever," you say. "Pick me out something good," she says. "Chad told you to meet him in the department store Burdines. Of course, you are early. You stand near the top of the escalator, nodding and unknotting your puka shell choker. You want to look busy when he shows up, so you pretend the cord is broken, bothering you. You feel like annoyed is your most mature look. "Hey," he says from behind you. You had expected to see him on the escalator, but he must have been here all this time, waiting. "Hey, you," you say. You hug an awkward hug, a few hard pats on the back. You wonder if, by the end of the day, you will kiss goodbye, if the hug will be tighter by 4 o'clock, if he might even slip you some tongue, if, by then, it would feel natural. "So I, left something in my car?" he says, and it almost sounds like a question. He smiles at you as he says it. His teeth are so wet and perfect. They glow under the fluorescent lights. He repeats himself, "Left something in my car?" and looks at you as if you should know what this means, as if you should have expected this. "And shopping?" you say. "It won't take long," he says. "Will you walk with me to the car?" You could stop here. You could ask, "What exactly did you leave?" You could say, "No thanks, but meet me back here when you're done. I'll wait." You know the kinds of things he has told you about, the kinds of things that happen in cars, in his car, the words that make him breathe so heavily into the phone you can feel the heat of each syllable in your ear. You could walk away right now and buy your presents. You could change the story. "But yes," is what you say. "Sure." Chad holds your hand as you walk out the exit, over to the covered parking lot. Nobody has ever held your hand before, not in this way, and it feels damp, uncomfortable. You feel self-conscious he'll see your fingers in the daylight, the wet open wounds around your nails where you gnaw the skin off, where you've been cutting with safety pins at night. You always carry yourself with fists, your thumbs tucked in. Sometimes, when it's worse, you wrap each fingertip in bandages for school. Your mother says you look like a serial killer that way, and this only makes you do it more. "This is me," he says, motioning to the blue car you already know is his. He opens the rear left door and asks you to slide in. He slides in after you. It's dark in the car in this covered lot, but right away you see a figure in the driver's seat, the side of a face. It's Gil. "Hey, princess," he says, but he doesn't turn his head around. He doesn't even look at you. He smacks a button that locks all the doors in a quick thwack. He moves his hand around the seat toward Chad. Chad gives him 5. You say nothing. Chad leans in with his eyes open, staring at you. You can't believe a man is this close to your face. He tells you to open your mouth. You do. You feel his tongue on your tongue, and you feel like you might choke. You like this feeling. So this is a kiss. You don't know what to do with your hands, so you sit on them. Chad moans as he circles his tongue. It's that same laugh cry sound from the phone. He pulls away. "Show me," he says, as he lifts your t-shirt to your neck. "Flowers, how cute," he says, as he yanks down the cup of your bra. In this moment, you are humiliated. Your bra has shape, but your breasts do not. Your breasts are nothing but swollen, sore nipples, puffed and pink as erasers. There is nothing else but that. Still, he takes them into his mouth, the left and then the right, and calls you so sweet, sexy, and says, "Is that what you've been keeping from me?" You say nothing. Chad pulls your shaking hand out from under your jeans. For a moment, you consider reaching for the handle of the door, but he catches your hand in his, wraps your raw fingers around his cock. You don't know when he unzipped his pants, when it appeared, but it's there, twitching. You have never seen anything like it before, this strange organ, the palest skin. He moves his hand and your hand with it. You are surprised that the skin moves, that it's not a solid thing. With his other hand, he takes your hair in his fist, pushes your head down, tells you to be good. You have no idea what you're doing, but you do your best to breathe. He says, "Cut that shit with the teeth, open up. You do your best to be good." He pushes your head all the way down to finish, and tears splash from your eyes onto his boxers. He opens the car door, says, "I'm going shopping," and Gil gets out of the front seat, comes to meet you in the back. You had forgotten he was even there all this time. You had forgotten the world. His cock is already out. There is no kissing or touching. There are no words. It is larger than Chad's, the size of your forearm. It smells like chlorine. He's more forceful with you, squeezing your wrists in his big hands, clearing your pulse. He pushes and pulls your hair like a fast, violent knock on a door until the rod of him glugs down your throat, until you are coughing, crying, until you have bitten your lip so hard it's bleeding. He calls Chad on his flip phone. "Come back to the car," he says, and snaps it shut. Chad opens the driver's seat door. He turns the music up. Chris Carrabba. They high-five again. "You can't just get out of the car like this, princess," says Chad. "It'll look weird." They drive you around the loop of the mall, drop you off on the side of the road. "Thanks, Cherry Top," says Chad. You say nothing. You don't for years. In the 15 years since high school, Chad has been arrested for petty theft, grand theft, drug possession, assault, simple battery, battery of a law enforcement officer, burglary with assault, battery with prior offenses, multiple violations of parole, and has been declared a habitual felony offender by Broward County. He has attempted suicide 3 times, overdosed 2 times, and spent 3.5 years in state prison. He spent years in a homeless shelter. Once, in prison, he was strapped naked to a steel bunk and shit himself. The correctional officers dragged his soiled body around the grounds of the prison, hosing him off, humiliating him, scraping his body pink as a gumdrop. Gil is an attorney in Boca Raton. He represents victims of sexual violence and harassment. He married his high school sweetheart, the 18-year-old classmate and girlfriend you learn he'd had the whole time. These are some of the things Chad is telling you now on the internet. They all check out. With a simple Google search, you're able to scroll through Chad's mugshots over the years. You find his Twitter, his dating profile, the racial slurs and flat earth conspiracy theories he has posted online. Still, it is difficult to think about him as more than a ghost, as a real person in the present world. He has 2 injunctions of protection against him, 1 for stalking, 1 for repeated violence, but you don't know that yet. Just last year, after he was released from prison, Beth filed the 1st restraining order against him. He reached out to her for forgiveness, she will later confirm, and things got ugly from there. Another girl, a minor, filed an injunction soon after. When this essay is published 1 year after you write it in that New Hampshire artist colony, you will file the 3rd. You walk along the side of the road, back toward the mall. Maybe, you think, this is what adults do when they feel the feels of love. Maybe they share their girls. Maybe it's quick, forceful. Maybe it happens just like that. It's not even 1 o'clock. Winter in Florida. You push open the mall door and feel the suck of the air conditioner. You are nervous to be seen. You are absolutely not allowed to be inside a mall or anywhere alone. You walk in and out of cosmetic stores. In the track-lit mirror, you look different, Your eye makeup is smudged like a bruise. Your cheeks are flushed. Your hair is no longer straight or smooth. Worst of all, your lips. Your lips are at least 3 times their regular size, raw and shiny, purple and inflamed from the teeth. Whose teeth? Whose bite marks? You can't be sure now. In the mirror, you think, I don't look like a girl anymore. And then, I look like such a pathetic little girl. And then, maybe this is what a woman looks like. And then, I look sexy like this, beaten, theirs. And then, I wish I were a boy. And then, I look like every other girl there ever was. You do your best with the sample powders, rub the beige cream under your eyes. Your mom will notice the mess of you, you're sure. You are nothing like your mother. Since drying out, your mother is clean and smooth as a candle wick, press creases, adored. You buy each of your parents a present with their own money, a teacup for your mother, a baseball cap for your father. You buy a large bottle of orange soda from the food court, your favorite. You want the fizzy orange chemicals to dye your mouth, to blame the bloom of your lips on this simple thing. Your parents pick you up from the entrance of Birdine's at 4 o'clock. Those lips, they say, and you agree. You lift the empty bottle of soda. Sorry, I must have drunk too much. You look like you're bleeding, says your father. I tripped on the escalator, you say. You sure about that? Says your father. I'm super sure. Something happened in there with Beth? He says. Your father was never a great father, but when sober, he was always a great man. He was the person who loved you most, and 15 years later when he dies, when you're talking to that rocking chair in New Hampshire, hoping it is he who has possessed it, you consider this moment in the car, how the trajectory of your life and your relationship to him could have changed had you told him the truth. If there was no mother in the driver's seat, no fear of getting in trouble, if there was no escalator in that mall. It's a father's job to protect his daughter, he told you, more than once. But your story never got there. That story is not yours. Just shut up about it, you say. The only person you ever tell is Clarissa, sitting on her bed under her painted-on clouds. You tell the story calmly, sucking on your fingertips, no big deal. You tell her they both wanted you, they both had to have you, and you were very good at it. Their cocks were big, and you took the whole thing like a goddamn champ. You are such a slut, she screams. Jealous, you think. You want so badly for her to be jealous. You gonna do it again? She asks. Nah, you say. They're graduating soon. I don't want them to get too attached to me. The truth? You never heard from Gil again. You heard from Chad only once, online. He asked if you might be willing to meet up with him the following weekend at the mall again, if next time you would let him fuck you in the back seat. He promises it will feel good after it hurts. He warns you not to tell Beth. You block his screen name, unhook your private line. You begin sleeping in your parents' bed every night, a habit you were never able to fully break. It was just so romantic, you say. You believe these words. That's how it starts. Gil's email address is listed on his law firm's website. It's late at night in the New Hampshire library, your bracelets clattering against a desk. Another colonist named James watches your handshake, says, Are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure you want to open up all that? You are. Do you remember me? You type. I have some questions. I'd be grateful if you'd be willing to answer them. Why did you hurt me? Is the only question, the only one that matters. But you do not write this. Of course I remember you, he replies, almost immediately. I will give it my best to answer any questions you have. I hope you are doing good. You ask if he might be willing to share his memory of the day at the mall. Your point of view would be helpful for my own closure, you say, no matter what that may be. You ask if he has ever thought of it again, If the experience held any weight for him, you tell him there are no right answers. You believe this is true. Gil responds from a different email address, his personal one. "Let me really think about it," he says, "so I can give you my best recollection. I want to help you," he says, "in any way that I can." You never hear from Gil again. On Skype, the 28-year-old Beth looks exactly the same. "There's a reason I'm so difficult to find," she says, "but I'm so glad you found me." She is still so beautiful, Beth. You cry as soon as you see her face on the screen. "I'm doing well," she says. "I love living somewhere with seasons," she says. "I heard about your dad," she says. "No one could ever forget him." "Thank you." Beth tells you that she still works every day to forget her experiences with Chad. She says she doesn't blame him, that blaming him would give him power. Beth believes that blame would add fuel to a dangerous situation, and anyways, it's a chapter she's closed. She's religious these days, at peace with her 13-year-old self and the decisions she knows she was not prepared to make. She says, "If I can wish him well, I feel that I have won." "Do you feel that he assaulted you?" you ask. "No," she says. "I think he only ever wanted love." You talk for an hour, maybe two, but these are the only details you can share here, right now. Remember, there is a reason she's so difficult to find. By now, you both are. One day, in the spring, Beth hands you a diamond-shaped note, not looking at you. "Meet me at the flagpole after class." At the bell, she swings on her backpack and almost hits you in the face with it. Outside in the sun, Beth's hair whips around her face like she's pulsing with electricity. Her eyes twitch so the tears won't fall. You know what is about to happen, and you miss her already. "Was it worth it?" she asks. "Was what?" You cover your ears with your hands. You say, "No, no, 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 no." You cry. You take it. You deserve every last insult. You beg. You fall on your knees and stain your uniform in the wet grass. Your classmates walk by, shaking their heads. You almost throw up into the dirt. You say, "Please, Beth, no, please." Beth picks you up off the ground by your armpits. She hugs you like she means it, like she's the first person who has ever wanted to take care of you. You do not understand why, not yet, but no one has ever been more kind to you than Beth. Beth tries to be your friend for the rest of high school, but it's not the same. You are a slut, and you know it. You can't be trusted, and you know it. Soon, you only occasionally wave to each other from across the halls. No one ever speaks of Chad again, not once he graduates. Clarissa told Beth what you had done. It was the right thing to do. And entering high school, the two of them become best friends. You deface both their pictures in your yearbook. You sleep with the book in your arms. You tell Chad, Clarissa, and Beth that you're writing an essay about them. They all give you permission, tell you to rename them however you'd like. "I'm so deeply honored you would write about me," Chad says, "although I'm sure your portrayal of me will not be glorious." He's had a spiritual awakening, and he sends you a YouTube video about it. He asks if you are religious. He feels bad for you that you're not. He compares you to a plant growing in the shade. He wants to know if you're single. You are not sure why you're even talking to Chad, what you think he can tell you. "Was there anyone else?" you ask him. "Other girls our age, besides me and Beth." One name, and then another, and another. He lists 4 right then, though there will be more later. "That car," one will say. "I can still feel the air conditioning inside of that car." These are girls you knew, liked. A girl from the school play. A girl who once made you a friendship bracelet out of telephone wire. Other girls everyone wanted to be. Chad says, "My life up to this point has been not so much fun. You could say I was paid back 100 times over for what I did to you or anyone else. Does that make you feel better?" Does it? I still don't know. All of us in the same car, outside the same mall. All of us girls, now women. All of our hands reaching for a door.